What qualities does an artist need in order to engage in his creation? Last week, in our previous session, we spoke about Bezalel, the Gemara's treatment of Bezalel, and Rav Kook's treatment of that Gemara, in the different ways of seeing that an artist must possess. Today we're going to continue in that same Gemara in Brachot Daf Nun Hei Omed Aleph, and in the Ein Ayah, 2 Brachot, page 263-264, in volume 2 of Brachot, Ot Lamed, for Rav Kook's continued treatment of Bezalel. But unlike last week, where we tried to understand the different ways of seeing that an artist must possess or develop, today we're going to talk a little bit about the different ways of thinking that an artist must possess and develop. And we are doing that, as always, with Rabbi Didier Sinclair and Rabbi Chaim Bravender, who will help us first make sense of the Gemara on Daf Nun Hei Omed Aleph.
The Gemara begins, Omar Yudah Mar Rav. A statement attributed to Rav of an agadic nature. Yodea Hayav Bezalel Netzaref Osio Shenivru Bahem Shamayim Baharetz. There is this notion that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, that the Torah preceded the actual creation of the world, and the Torah was somehow used in that act of creation. The Torah, that is to say, the letters of the Torah, which are the building blocks of Torah, and became somehow the building blocks of the creation. And the way it is imagined is that there is tziruf osios, that by putting together the letters in a special way, you're able to create whatever it is that those letters imply. So that this is a high level of complement. That to say that Bezalel knew how to cull the letters together, the ones that were the building blocks of creation, is a very, very high compliment. Rav says this is inferred from the following. Ksiv Hocha, in one place, the pasuk says, Vayimale oso ruach elokim, v'chokhmo v'svuno v'das. He was filled with the Spirit of God, wisdom, understanding, knowledge, ksiv hasam. Another pasuk, this time in Mishlei, Hashem v'chokhmo yasar oretz, that God with wisdom established the world. Konen shamayim b'svuna, and he determined, or he again established heaven with this other midah called svuna or bino. Ksiv bedato tahomos nivku. He used das. God used das in order to split the depths, so that these three verbs, which appear in the pasuk in Shmos about Bezalel, appear variously in psukim about the creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the quality of Bezalel, which enabled him to build the Mishkan, was the creative act. He was a creator. He had the power of creation. And the difficulty with building the Mishkan was apparently that it couldn't just be fashioned. It had to actually be created. And that's why Bezalel was chosen and had to be the one who built this particular Mishkan.
So what does this Gemara juxtaposition of Bezalel's creation and God's creation, and the attribution of the same qualities of Chochma, Bina, and Dat to Bezalel as attributed to Hashem in creating the world, what does that teach us about the artist? and what the artist needs in order to make his art. What do we think about that before we dive into Rough Cook?
A creation seems to me to be the ability or the undertaking of something that is completely new, as opposed to something that is fashioned from pre-existing elements. And even though when you read the Chumash, it sounds as though the Mishkan, the tabernacle, is going to be built like any other crossword puzzle or Lincoln Log set, where you take pre-made materials or elements and you put them together in the right way. And yet there apparently was this understanding that the Chachamim had, which was that the Mishkan could not simply be built as other places are built, but that the result would be so entirely new that it would need a special quality to say that there was a person in the world who could, in fact, reproduce God's own effort at creation of the world is fairly remarkable, but it does answer the question to a certain extent of why the choosing of Bezalel is so significant. If Bezalel only performed some technical work, as talented as he may have been, it's not perfectly clear why he would get honorable mention in the Torah. After all, the information was brought down from heaven by Moshe Rabbeinu, and whoever did the work would do the work. I mean, in our terms, it would not be so outstanding. But if he's creating a Mishkan somehow, if he's emulating God, then certainly he's a person of note and worthy of mention.
Right. So it was remarkable about him was he had something of these qualities, divine qualities of creation about him. So if we're interested in creation, whether an artist's creation or God's creation, we're going to want to know what these three qualities of Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at are. And that's what Rav Kook proceeds to explain to us in his commentary, which begins at Ot Lamed in the bottom of page 263. So Rav Kook says this. He says, Hakisharon ha'amiti shel ha'mitzayer ha'omen kashehu barom ma'alat kishrono. They are the qualities of the artist who is at the summit of his talent, the peak of his talent, who bepat misha mehagia lemida zu shekishrono Kishonot Nikadesh Buruach Elohim, and particularly someone who gets to the level where his talent is sanctified by the Spirit of God. Cook seems to be suggesting that an artist gets to a certain point where his qualities, his talents are validated or stamped by the infusion of the Spirit of God, whatever that means. Huli yot makia ba'am ketiv iham tziyot bein b'tzad ha'gashmi shalahem, bein b'tzad ha'ruchani shalahem. He needs to get to the bottom natural existence, to understand it in its depths, both from its material side and also from its spiritual side. And this, Rav Kook says, is what it means to have to create b'chochma, b'tuna, u'dat. And then he goes on to explain what exactly these things are. V'hadavarim kolalim yachas ha'metziyut kula b'chlala v'yachas chalkeh hazeh lezeh ruchaniyut v'gashmiyut. These things encompass the relationship between the interpenetration of the physical and the spiritual. ובכללו הננו מכירים את הכוחות הגשמיים לנפעלים את הרוחות הרוחניים לפועלים עליהם לשכללם ולפתחם. And we recognize the way in which physical forces are acted upon by spiritual forces which encompass them and tend towards their development. Hachochma te'oma al ha'emdata metziat kulo ba'etza amuka shehim malei koach va'oz shel kiyum ha'nifla v'ha'aracha shel shivui v'yoshe nehedah. So Chochma, as Rav Kook explains it, is the way that physical existence is established with deep knowledge and understanding, and it's filled with a kind of a power and strength of existence which orders the way in which it's arrayed and established. That's Chochma for Rav Kook. I appreciate that this at the moment seems so general that I at least can hardly sort of imagine it and put a determinate meaning on it. But I think that if we persevere, we will be able to understand what this means in more concrete terms, both for an artist and for the creation we see around us. So Chochma is the way in which the structure of the physical is established. Let's just say that for now. Amnam ha-tivuna te'oma al erech ha-metziyot lo kafi shehi lefaneinu or kafi mashehu nireh b'tzachilat b'riyato shezeh erech yuchol la-hayameh gam al ha-metziyot ha-gashmit levado shegam b'chukeha anu ro'im chachma nifla. Now, tivuna, on the other hand, is not just physical existence as it appears to us or as it seems at first sight, which is what Chochma is in its physical existence. Ki im te'omer od ki hakonaniyut she'tuchonenu ba'hametziyut b'chlala li'yot holechet b'tov holechet u'mitalev עד שתבוא לידי ערך רם מאוד ומאוד נעלה בכל היהודים הגדולים שיהיו לעתיד לבוא. So tvuna, as Rav Kook understands it, is something like the spiritual force running through all of physical existence, which tends towards raising it up and developing it and eventually perfecting it. A sort of a divine spiritual energy which is in all of existence and works through it. That's as much as I can define at the moment what Rav Kook means here by tvuna. So let's skip a couple of lines. And Al kein amar Hashem b'chochma yasad aretz. Therefore the pasuk says b'chochma, in chochma the world is established. The foundations of the world, the physical foundations, are laid with Chochma. HaChochma shel ha'emdat ha'metziyut kamo shehi niret gam kein b'gashmuto shel ha'metziyut. That's the Chochma is what the physical foundations of the world are laid with. Konein shamayim b'tvuna. Then the heavens are laid out with tvuna. The heavens here alluding to the spiritual aspect of existence. Haruchaniyut shel ha'metziyut ha'kochot ha'poalim l'romem u'sheshachlel oto. That is the force which works through the physical to raise it up and to encompass it. That's tvuna. Ha'havana shel toldot b'chidush davar midavar. Kolomar hishtalshalut shel toldot ha'chadashot ha'olot b'rom ma'alot gvohot. That force within existence which is able to continually machadesh, to renew and refine existence as it is. But these two things, Rav Kook says, are not by themselves enough. Amnam kibbutz ha-chochma v'hatzuna nimtza al yedei ha-rachat gashmiut el ha-ruchaniut yol u'shlam legamrei ki im badat. That these two capacities of chochma and bina are not themselves completed except by da'at. What's da'at? Ha-da'at da'at hi ha-hakara ha-amukah she'eino uzevet kol prat katan miprate ha-metziyut ha-yoter katanim she'lo tashlimuhu b'tachlit she'klalo. Da'at is the deep awareness which doesn't let the Creator ignore any detail, however small, in existence, until it contributes to and completes the whole picture. So Da'at is the ability to go down and pay attention to the smallest detail in the creative work. And this comes from a penetrating inner awareness of the needs and the emotions in all of creation which he created. And so, at the end of this column, Rav Kook sums up what he said about the three characteristics with these words: "V'hinei b'chol pa'ula v'chol porach ha'pratis shebriya tzarich l'shituf al shlosh eile la'harich et korach ha'chokhma b'kiyum ha'emda shel chozek ha'metziyut im ha'hechsher liyot mitalem mitalot v'aliyot shel rumot shonot b'tziruf ha'diyuk ha'nimratz shel ha'mniya ha'hashmata so kol nekuda kala v'katana v'adrasha lehishkalo ha'klali v'aprati." So Rav Kook said you need all these things working together in creative work. You need chokhma, which sets out the basic physical foundations of whatever it is you're making. You need bina, which is the spiritual force within it, which unfolds it and elevates it. And you need an attention to every single detail in the work, no matter how small it is. This all seems very, very general until this point. But I thought that I'd try and illustrate what Rav Kook means by looking at a particular artist and one or two pictures by that artist, who is Pieter Bruegel, the 16th century Dutch painter.
Dutch master.
And he happens to be one of my favorite artists, but I think that his work exemplifies these three qualities very sharply, in a way which helps us understand what Rav Kook is talking about. So I want to look at the famous painting of the Tower of Babel, which Bruegel made in 1563, and it hangs today in the Kunsthistorische Museum in Vienna.
If you click on the link from our website, you can see a reproduction of the said image.
Now this picture is exemplifies traits which are, I think, a characteristic of a number of Bruegel's pictures. First of all, you have a remarkably sweeping but intricate landscape laid out in front of you. It's a vast canvas, and to the right of the picture you see seas. And behind you, you have rolling hills, and to the left, you have a large city. And rising in the middle of this is the incompleted but vast Tower of Babel. And these large sweeping landscapes are themselves characteristic of Bruegel. And I think you can understand by this what Rav Kook means by chokhma, that Bruegel has laid out the basic physical structure and foundations of this picture very, very carefully and meticulously.
This, you see this in a lot of, many of Bruegel's paintings. You can also see it in the other one painting which we've singled out, which is The Hunters in Winter. I think that's also linked on the website.
Hunters in the Snow.
Hunters in the Snow. Where again you have a foreground with trees and slopes, snow-covered slopes, and then undulating fields stretching out behind you. A vast and very carefully designed and structured landscape. Now to return to the Tower of Babel, when you see in this picture, as again I think in many of Bruegel's picture, a very profound and penetrating spiritual vision. The Bruegel's understanding of the foolishness and the hubris of the Tower of Babel comes through wherever you look in this picture. In the tower itself, you have a vast building stretching to heavens, with archways and balustrades which are beautifully completed in the best traditions of 14th and 15th and 16th century architecture. A magnificent and elaborate and extravagant structure. But then you have the next to these, the unfinished and rough patches of the building which are incomplete, which testify eloquently to the ultimate failure of the project, with magnificent visual quality. And in the foreground, that same spiritual insight of hubris and arrogance and human presumption is expressed in the scene of the king, presumably Nimrod, who's come on a tour of inspection of the building, and the poor humble workers who are crushed by the vast stones by their carrying, bowing, supplicating in front of him. Workers behind him almost crushed by the stones, which he seems to be oblivious of. Again, the same spiritual insight of human hubris and presumption penetrates the whole canvas. And it's a very large canvas. It's about 4 feet by 5 feet all together. And that seems to be what Rav Kook means by Bina. There's a spiritual understanding of what Migdal Bavel is about, which is guiding Bruegel's composition of this whole canvas. And that understanding of what it's about guides his composition down to the very smallest details. And again, this is the attention to detail is also a characteristic of Bruegel. In this, as many other pictures, you have a vast picture, and sometimes even scores or hundreds of small figures, all doing something important in the canvas, and all, it seems to me, in this picture contributing to the realization of the vision which Bruegel is setting out in the picture. From the figures who are supplicating in front of the king, to the builders balancing precariously on the edges of the building as they try to construct it, to the way in which Bruegel has sketched the roughness and incompleteness of the building, down to the finest lines which give us this bleak picture of incompletion and failure next to the very grandeur of the parts which are built. It seems to me that in every little detail of the picture, Bruegel is giving expression to this guiding spiritual vision which he has about the painting. To me, this shows the interaction of what Rav Kook means by chokhmah, the architectonic of the landscape, bina, the spiritual vision, and daat, the working out of the vision down to the smallest details, in a way which starts to become comprehensible as an interpretation of Rav Kook's commentary. He goes on to say how does that strike you? Does that seem like a reasonable interpretation of what Rav Kook's saying?
If I thought backwards from the painting,
yes.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Now I think I understand a bit more about why you chose this painting, but I would say,
mm-hmm.
looking at the painting, is what I see is God's world
uh-huh.
and man's world.
Uh-huh.
And God's world is simple
uh-huh.
in the picture.
Where do you uh-huh. see God's world?
Oh, the landscape, the uh-huh. grasses, the rolling hills, the water.
Uh-huh.
That's God's world.
Uh-huh.
The Tower of Babel is man's world. They wanted to make a world that was competitive, that could reach into heaven, that could establish dominion on earth. So man's world is complex. It's got a lot of features in it, it's unfinished,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly more complex than God's world in this picture. And because of that, I think the artist is showing us, I mean, ordinarily, or there are many pictures of the Tower of Babel where the tower looks something like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, like a narrow cone going up and down, and on the emphasis is somehow on the height of it, being able to get to heaven. Whereas here I think the emphasis is on the complexity of it. It's like they built a shopping center that they could just stay in forever. And in that way, they would conquer the world. It was living in the Tower
of Babel. Each according to his own need.
Each according to his own ability. Living in the Tower of Babel seems to be more secure than living in God's world, which we had to work hard and fight off the elements of various kinds. And the Tower of Babel is a controlled environment in this picture. And it has a lot of rooms in it for all sorts of people who are standing outside, all collected around this Tower of Babel with the understanding that it's a better option. Like, let's go to the Tower of Babel and let's not stay in the meadows and the rolling hills of the created world. So this is, I think, the artist is showing us a misuse of chokhmah and das.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they did understand something, but what they didn't understand apparently was that God's will was not that we should create an alternate world, but God's will was that we should create God's world as well as, or better than, or something there. So that the Tower of Babel, this painting of the Tower of Babel, is quite overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Tower of Babel itself is overwhelming mm-hmm. in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is underwhelmed, so to speak. This certainly indicates that the artist thought that the man had the capacity for lofty thoughts, even if they were misguided. If that's what Rav Kook was talking about, that I don't know, but it seems to me that that's what the painting is aspiring to say in those mm-hmm. terms. Maybe there are other terms. As you said, he represents architecture, and he represents the use of color at that time. But clearly this Ad HaShamayim, the notion that the tower goes mm-hmm. up to heaven, is not mm-hmm. clearly indicated in this picture.
Well, even though it goes up to the cloud.
You know, yeah, but it's...
It's not the emphasis.
No, it's a low-flying cloud. I think the emphasis is that heaven is in the recreated world, and that way it's closer to B'Tzalel. You know, Bezalel was supposed to build something, but it should be entirely new and different than anything that had ever been built. Mm-hmm. And so the Tower of Babel, according to the artist, is something new and different, even though it's made out of blocks and stones. But since it represents an attempt to overwhelm creation somehow, to make a new venue,
mm-hmm.
you know, central, important venue, that's what I see in the picture, and I would connect it more to Bezalel, where the Tower of Babel is maybe Chochmah, Bina, and Das gone awry,
mm-hmm.
and Bezalel is Chochmah, Bina, and Das properly applied.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is the measure of humility, of course.
Yeah.
The people of Tower of Babel, they had no humility.
You see, if you compare it to some other renderings, medieval renderings of early modern renderings of the Tower of Babel, again from the link online, you'll see that this is true. Other artists portray it, even modern artists portray it as some kind of like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, as Robin mentioned.
Hmm. Well, it takes up all the space, so to speak. You know, there's nothing else there.
Apparently, there's an earlier Bruegel painted an earlier version of this painting, which is titled "The Little Tower of Babel," which dates from around 1563.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to be an earlier, not so much an earlier study for the painting, but. It's much different.
I think that actually comparing those two paintings bears out Rabbi Brovner's point about the world of God and the world of nature, because here you don't, in the earlier picture, you don't have that. You just have the world of human beings,
right,
which takes
all,
up the whole
all
picture.
Of the, it's obviously a study
for
his later, more complete, more profound painting, but the all of the interesting detail, including the presence of the king and the interaction, the story that's unfolding in the lower left-hand corner of the more detailed picture is missing.
And in the later painting, you have the world of the painting is balanced, I think, by the world of human beings, the city on the left of the picture. And the world of God, the trees and the rolling hills on the right of the picture, and to make that point. Well, I'm not sure that I see the world of God as being simple in the picture. I see it. You know, you have trees and you have grass and you have hedgerows and you have winding rivers and you have the sea and you have a mountain range, and seems to me it's pretty complex. And I think the complexity of God's world is being balanced against the complexity of the human world, which would fit with what Rav Kook then wants to go on to say about Bezalel, Chochmah, Bina, and Das, because he then goes on to say that these qualities of Chochmah, Bina, and Das which the artist has are precisely those which God used in order to create the world. In the left-hand corner, he says, "V'hinei kol eile hadavarim ha-ne'amarim b'chlalam b'yotzeh kol yitbarach shemo b'ha'arichinu et plaot chochma ha-yitzira kula tzichim lehimatze me'ein dugmatam b'chochma shalem l'chochmat melechet machshevet." That we see all these creative qualities in the creation of the world, which we see in any great work of human creation. Then Bezalel's Ruach Elohim consisted in that he was able to bring just these qualities of attention to the whole physical whole, to the spiritual vision, and to the details, to bear on his building of the Mishkan. It's hard to say, well, what does it mean to say these qualities were what God used to create the world? I mean, we weren't there, but you can say that the world obviously exhibits great extraordinary attention to detail, together with a guiding spiritual vision behind it, and the interplay between them in ways which we're able to understand today, in ways which Ralph Cook couldn't yet. I mean, just what everybody knows today about the existence of DNA, which means that every cell of an organism contains with it a code which describes the whole organism, seems to be just what Ralph Cook is saying about Chochmah, Bina and Daat in creation. That the very smallest molecular, the very smallest molecular level reflects and expresses the vision which is guiding the development of the whole. And Ralph Cook says that these three qualities and the interplay between them are necessary both for the artist and for the divine artist in constructing the creation. Does this mean anything to us as a blueprint for art education? I mean, given you're teaching art in the religious schools, I mean, if this is these general qualities of what an artist needs, do we know how to teach or infuse these qualities in our students? Or?
Well, I mean, the two positions on teaching art. Right? One position is you teach how to do it,
mm-hmm.
and then if somebody has talent, so somehow that talent will emerge. But perhaps that is actually shooting too low, and that what we have to do is encourage students to think about the act of art. Like, what is it? I mean, since art is an expression and it's internal language, and obviously for some people it's a language that can be used to express things better than other languages. And we call that creativity. And maybe the way to encourage students to investigate their own predilection to creativity is try to introduce them more to the creativity of the artist, specifically as a specific topic, and not the way art is often taught, that historical or sociological or political terms, which are interesting, but which tend to emphasize the glory of what is happening, and why it is that people will come again and again to look at a work of art. Whereas some things, once you learn them, you're not interested in them anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. Sort of they self-destruct as you figure out how to use them.
Mm.
But art attracts me. The more I know about the art or the piece of art or the artist, the more I'm drawn back to reevaluate it. And that's apparently got something to do with Chochmah and Tmuna, because those are things that are inside of me, and I'm attracted as a bee to honey to a superior use of those qualities that I feel are part of me. So I think that art education should be more about great art than about doing art. Doing art is another matter. It's a way to find out who you are in terms of the variety of talent that you might have. But great art gives me the ability to think about things in the way that
that art enables you to think about it, and that's often enlightening.
So, that so learning, that learning, trying to see a work of art through these lenses can you know, teach us something about the creative process which the artists use in general, and which may have wider implications in the world.
Yeah, very often, I mean, it's hard to say that the artist was thinking about Rav Kook when he painted the Tower of Babel, or even that he was thinking about Rashi. Nevertheless, he sort of makes us aware in a very powerful way of a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we dredge up the things that we know in order to reconstruct that point of view in our own language. So I mean, it's less interesting what exactly the artist thought than what it is that we can think about looking at the product that the artist left us. And I think that's true with the most literary analysis or the analysis of music, but the art is a language that has parameters. I mean, it has a beginning, it has an end. You can cut up into its smaller pieces, and you can you can create a position which is reasonable. And that reasonable position then in turn becomes redefined by whatever knowledge and understanding you have in you. So it attracts the creative forces in you to further express what the artist was pointing to in languages that you've learned, even though the artist may not be aware of those languages at all. So again, it could enhance the way you understand Torah, as we are trying to do here. Enhance the way you understand the world that you're looking at, right? Which is, after all, the Rambam says that it's important to look at the world and to be appreciative of it. But there's a difference between a shoemaker looking at the world and a microbiologist who knows about the DNA helixes. I mean, he looks at the same world, but he may see something entirely different. So art helps to bridge that gap between the world I usually look at and I know about, and the world that I could think about, but I have to be encouraged to think about it. And this this painting, especially of the Tower of Babel, I think is very encouraging. It's very, it leads me to say something, to think about something, to reevaluate my own notions.
It strikes me as we're talking that this question of the relationship between the whole and the parts, which Ralph Cook is talking about through art, is a very important one in Jewish education. That students often have a difficulty in seeing the relationship between the whole and the parts. You know, you can spend a month discussing how high a sukkah should be, and the student is left thinking, what's this got to do with, you know, with Chochmah, Bina, and Dat, or anything important? And it's often not good enough to say, you know, we'll learn the whole of Shas and then you'll understand the relationship between the big vision and the little details, because the student might get fed up before he's learned the whole of Shas. And the way Rav Kook is saying that it's essential, this relationship between the big vision and the way it's worked out in the smallest details, can maybe help us think about how to teach the relationship between the whole and parts in Torah and Halakha. I'm not sure how, but it's worth thinking about.
But we will continue to think about that when we continue with our next session. Please tune back in for another webcast of Iyunei Omanut, looking at Torah, Rav Kook, art, and Jewish education.